When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Brewski, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
If you did not get a chance to watch the sentencing of Donna Adelson the other day, well, let me tell you, you are in luck, because we have handpicked some of the best moments from this groundbreaking moment in television history. It was quite a spectacle to watch. We covered it here live. Me and Robin went through it and were commenting in almost peanut gallery in some cases. But it was disturbing. It was a real crazy example in what I think a lot of people would look at as narcissistic collapse. I don't know any other way to look at it, but here to help us take a look at it. And we're going to break down the testimony of Harvey, of Donna, and also some of what, in, if you're familiar with narcissistic abuse and things of that nature, the term flying monkeys, the folks that go and do your bidding for you, that still, even after confronted with fact of your evil deed, still are out there spinning your own tail. And some of them showed up the court just the other day. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, joining us to do just that. Have you had a chance to dig into any of the sentencing the other day, or is this going to be the first time you're seeing some of the joys of the Donna Adelson?
I did watch quite a bit of it. I'm not sure if I saw everything, but I did see some of the various friends coming up and offering their 2 cents, and then I certainly saw Harvey and Donna.
Mm-hmm. Let's start. I want to start with one of the friends. There was a lot of messages that were just relayed by Jackie Fulfort, where she just read them. They were basic little blurbs of, Donna served me lunch in ninth grade, and she was a lovely lady, things of that nature. But then you had one, and they led with this one. This is a gentleman who was in their life quite a ways back, even at the beginning, is also going to say, when we listen, had not had a lot of interaction with them over the last 20 years, which I think is an important distinction to make and understand. But he also makes a lot of distinctions about who he is. And I'm not here to judge this man or say he's right or he's wrong. I think it's about perspective. And I think trying to understand, you know, if you don't have a lot of experience with these people in the last 20 years, I guess, why are you testifying on their behalf at their trial? But nonetheless, let's take a listen to this, and then we'll talk about what might be going through someone's mind if you're vouching for Donna Adelson. Let's take a look at this.
Let me swear you in again, sir. Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you will give today will be the truth?
I do.
You can lower your head. If you're examining the witness, or is he reading a statement?
He's going to present a statement, Judge.
Dr. Graber, you may proceed at this time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak on behalf of Donna Adelson. If I can, let me just a brief description of who I am, my background. I've been a friend of the Adelson family since 1979. First 20 years I knew them, we were actively engaged in many activities. And the last 20 years, I haven't seen them that much until this trial became apparent to me. And my background is I'm a medical doctor practicing obstetrics and gynecology, 45 years here in Florida. I was also a state legislature from 1988 to 96, representing Coral Springs and parts of Broward County. I was the county commissioner in Broward County and mayor of Broward County for 1 year in 2006. Also a professor at the University of Florida Medical School and the University of Miami Medical School in clinical OBGYN. And I'm here to speak today on behalf of Donna Adelson, this person I've known for a great deal of time. Hi, Donna. Just want to say hi. I'm sorry I can't be there to hug you. And I'm sorry we didn't get to have that dinner after your trial was over. But I'm here to, on your behalf, to let you know that you have friends, and I believe in you. Let me say that, Don, I never thought we'd be here at this situation when I first met you.
Right.
So it was a total shock to me and to our families. And it's a tragedy for me to have to be here to talk about this. I feel very bad for your family, for the Martell family, for the tragedy everyone's experiencing. The Mayes have been following us for 2 years. It appears to be a dissolution of two families. My background is similar in many ways to both families. I grew with Martell. I'm a Holocaust survivor. I actually was born in Germany at this place, Persons Camp, in the United States at the age of 18 months. So like the boys, Lincoln and Benjamin, I don't have a lot of recollection from the first beginning of my time in the United States, but they don't have the recollection of their father, which is very sad to me. But they do have families, and I have family. And we have to learn a great deal from our tragedies how to come back into life. My distress is not just for Donald and the Adelsons, but for the Martells as well, and especially for three generations of each family, which I see in tragic downward swing. And yet, I did meet Lincoln and Benjamin at the Bar Mitzvah last year, and I got to meet those two boys, wonderful boys. Unfortunately, I never got to meet Dan Martell, but I have read many of his articles. Very impressive, a really very talented man who made some very good points about the law and about compassion in the law, which he feels couldn't be improved. And I agree with that. So part of what I'd like to say today is basically that I do believe that Donna is a victim of not just circumstance, but has been actively exploited by parties involved in this case. I believe she was exploited by her son. Knowing Donna, who was the youngest child in her family, and knowing her mother, and how close she was with her mother, and understanding their love and need for family, it makes no sense to me that she would pursue an activity that would destroy two families like it has. However, having known her son and some of his issues, I believe Donna, in her own naive way, trying to be a loving mother, is subdued by guilt, by silence, by denial, and perhaps even active exploitation, and used for activities she had no part of. So I believe she didn't sit on all three counts, even though she was found guilty on all three counts. Part of my understanding is also that the victims here are both families. And to watch the hate and distress and the vengeance I see, it's a terrible thing to look at. As Holocaust survivors, you think we would understand that, how damaging it is to families.
You think.
I would have to say my background, I grew up in the Bronx, the public school system. I actually was at Queens College when Donna was there, but I didn't know her. But she graduated a year after I did. My wife, Sandy, graduated from Queens College as well. And in fact, Coral Springs, we met up after being there a while, new young families, professionals trying to build a life, having children, building the community, which we did. So to see this situation occur, to me, it was devastating in many aspects. As a legislator, I can tell you that we see things in the law. Even though I'm a doctor and was chairman of health care, I was a Democrat, majority leader, and I sat on Judiciary Committee for 2 years and spent out laws. Even wrote some of the sentencing guidelines and participated in passing them at that time. What I learned over the years is that I've had the privilege of passing many laws when I was a leader, and I was able to work both sides. So many of my laws exist in the books. I get calls from judges periodically asking me about the intent of the law when I wrote it, because they have a case, and it's come down to what did you intend to happen from this law? And they would ask my opinion, and they would use that information. So I'd like to talk a little bit about the intent of the judicial guidelines for sentencing. I think the life without parole is a very harsh sentence. And that was not the intent, was to punish domestic cases with that, but to hit drug dealers and organized crime and the dangers to the public. But I think it's been switched over to be used in conspiracy theories against the average citizen, which is not the intent of the law, in my opinion. Second of all, I think that it's unfortunate that this case has gone into so many new victims. And if already you have four victims who have been found guilty of murder, two have committed the murder, maybe one. The other are conspiracy theories. And I would believe that I would suggest that needs to be reviewed by the legislature. That's my opinion. Now, in this case,
Dr. Gruber, before you continue, is this being offered as character? Because he is not an expert on the law.
It's character, Judge.
Very well.
Thank you, Tom.
You may continue, Doctor.
Yes, that's my opinion from my background. That's not, I'm not giving a professional opinion. I'm giving my personal opinion from experience.
It's where the music plays you out at the award show.
Right, it's time.
The court, the judicial system, the power of the judicial system is in the judge. And it is the judge who is the presenter of a safety net for the public.
Okay.
To show some compassion when the cold.
This guy's insufferable.
Yeah, he is.
Every box checked off shows no compassion. Where does the compassion come from? It should come from the judge. It should come from the jury. And I think that maybe that's something.
Can you imagine being on a date with this guy?
So think at a bar and like he's next to you.
Like, oh, would you just shut up already?
I'm out.
That everything she can do for her kids, for her family, for her community. She has no bad intentions. She's not a leader. She's a baby in our family. She's always been a follower. Yes, she makes noise and she complains, but that's not her behavior. This is not her profile. So I understand that nothing can be changed, but I want to put on record that I believe she is innocent of these three counts, and we believe her. With that, I would have to say, sometimes bad things happen to good people.
Bad things happen to good people.
One of the families, I would ask, beg them, think about the two boys. Dad's not here, but a piece of him is here, one of those two boys. And their future, they're both teenagers now. Their future depends a lot on what's going on here, and how they're going to be perceived in the future, and how they will interpret the future based on this. So I think it's time for some compassion, some understanding, some forgiving. Perhaps it's time to take a step back and let everyone heal from this process. With that, I say to you, Donna, and I love you, we support you and the family, and we hope you the best. God bless you. And Your Honor, thank you for letting me speak.
There you go.
Wow.
So that was the doctor. One of their friends from a long time ago, I guess, speaking on their behalf. There was a lot to unpack there. Siobhan, what the hell did we just see?
I just kept thinking mansplaining.
Yes.
I mean, this guy likes to hear himself talk, doesn't he? He said as much about himself as he said about Donna. But yeah, good term would be flying monkey, somebody that's bought into the story and has an emotional investment in trying to save her and do her bidding. So I would have been wanting to edit that speech. That was unfortunate.
Yeah. It felt like he was just kind of like riffing and didn't really know what he was going to say to a certain, or like he had kind of an outline, but then it's like, I'm going to go everywhere. I'm going to grab this. I'm going to grab that. I'm going to pull this in. I guess the question would be, if you haven't been that close to these people in 20 some years and you know, your memories of her children are like children, little kids, and to be able to make these assumptions of she's exploited by her son and somehow downplaying the death of her grandkids' father because he lost his father too. There was some of that going on in there too, I believe, where it was, I've been through tough times too, and they can get through. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but what the fuck was that?
Yeah, I think it, as we're looking so much in this case of the narcissistic kind of tendencies that people have, this sort of screamed that too. It was loud and clear that this guy has some similar tendencies.
Yeah.
Do the flying monkeys typically believe the story or are they just, they're buying into it and they'll go along with it and nod their heads? Or are they fully 100% all in?
Yeah, it'll vary, but I think most of the time they really believe the story. They've bought in to the reality, kind of that extended narcissistic system. And people like that find other people like that and people who have a need to latch on. So I think usually they do buy it.
Do you have different degrees of flying monkeys when it comes to narcissists, where you have some that will just buy in because they're just ill-informed on the person, but they have little facts here and there that tell them that, well, they were nice to me once. These interactions I've had, they were great. I can't possibly see them being this way, and that they'll just blindly go at it. And do you have ones that are there with more of a motive of, I'll be your flying monkey, but you're feeding me as much as I'm feeding you. Is there that sort of thing? And is that even a flying monkey when it comes to that sort of a narcissistic relationship?
Yeah. And you know, I don't usually use terms like flying monkeys because that's putting a really simple box around something that's way more complicated than it is.
Sure.
And so I think you nailed it. Different people have different motivations. Some are actually basking in the glow. You know, they see the narcissistic person as this wonderful, perfect being, and they feel this sense of, you know, empowerment or, you know, that it rubs off on them. And I see that a lot. It's like, I want to be like this person. So I'm becoming their ally. And some are just really naive and dumb and believe the story that they're told.
And it's hard to know because, you're going to have all different ones for all different purposes here. And obviously, you know, can't diagnose this guy. I mean, I just feel like, this seemed like a platform for him to talk. Mm-hmm. He certainly talked and expressed his opinion. But I don't know. I'm always kind of shocked when people are expressing strong opinions on important matters when they're ill-informed on what they're even talking about. And that kind of is how that felt. Like, there's no evidence. There's like, excuse me? Like, did you watch the last four trials?
I don't think he did.
Yeah. And I think that's probably the answer is you probably did not watch the last, unless, you know, you go into it with the mindset that, you know, this is what it's going to be and I'm never going to absorb anything here or consider facts.
Yeah. Looking at it as it's all look at these people who are just out to get this poor woman, my good friend that I haven't seen in 20 years. So not absorbing it.
And that's the other part that just got my attention. So you're a close friend of hers, but you haven't seen her in 20 years. How does that work? How does that work?
Well, that's the trend with a lot of narcissists, though, too, is it not? I mean, it's kind of a cycle of friendships that are gone through and you know, some ending with bridges being, you know, set ablaze, others just, you know, off into the night. I wonder what happened to that person. And I'm kind of feeling like this might be more one of those, I wonder what happened to that person type relationships.
Until you see them in the national headlines and go, I should probably reach out and see what's going on.
I wonder if I can speak at their sentencing.
Right? Right?
The first thing that runs through my mind when I see an old friend in the headlines. Like, could this be a platform? I could talk about how I was a legislator in the 1990s. Harvey Adelson did not testify as a husband or trying to offer comfort. He testified as a man unraveling, angry, wounded, and still completely tethered to a version of reality where his wife, Donna Adelson, is a real victim, not Dan Markell.
Well, now he has to cook dinner, Tony.
That's true. But let's be honest here. You were struggling with that just a few months ago on the air. You were coming to me going, I don't know how I can cook a steak. And I had to say, Stacey, you can cook a steak.
I can cook
walk you through. I will walk you through how to cook a steak.
You never did that, by the way, dude.
No, you're right. Dave did.
You're right. My other radio partner did. Yeah, you did. Good point.
So
okay.
You can't. Okay. So,
touche.
So Donna, so what we have going on here, Donna Adelson is not the real victim here, but in Harvey's mind, that's what he's thinking. Not Dan Markell, not the grandchildren, not the justice system, just Donna. And by extension himself, for nearly 5 minutes, Harvey pled with the court to believe that his wife is innocent, that Dan's parents are liars, and that this was all the result of a biased judge and media frenzy. His voice cracked. His grief was real. But so was his total denial. Let's take a look at Harvey testifying for Donna, and then we'll talk about it on the other side.
Adelson, please raise your hand, sir. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth?
Yes, I do.
You can lower your hand. You may speak.
Thank you, Judge, and respected officers of the court for allowing me to speak. I have been Donna Adelson's husband for over 50 years. My wife sacrificed everything so that she could pour her heart and soul into our children, our grandchildren, and our marriage. This summer was our 54th wedding anniversary, and I had to spend it without her hand in mine. She has done nothing wrong, and yet is being punished for a crime that she did not commit. I thought we lived in a different kind of world, but I guess I was wrong. I have listened, watched, and sat in the courtroom for the entire trial, and I could not help but scream in my mind by the witnesses that were brought forward, by the prosecution who told outright lies. I didn't know that you could lie in a courtroom, but apparently you can. Danny's parents contend that they have never seen their grandchild. But for years they say they've never seen her. But Wendy has shared with me pictures and videos and letters from their visits. They have suffered immensely at the loss of their son, but they also contend to tell lies to the court about our grandchildren. Donna has always been a loving and caring wife and is innocent of the charges. A biased judge and jury were influenced by years of one-sided news pieces and social media.
Doctor, Ms. Fulford, this has nothing to do with the character of the defendant or the sentencing.
So Jackie never even looked at any of these things, it looks like. Just like, go ahead, say what you want. So they spent some time, and it was longer than this, going through it.
Donna did not participate in the heinous acts that she was convicted of doing. You are sending an innocent woman to prison. You have taken my wife and that, and you have taken my life as well. And for what? This is not justice. It is vengeance, and it is wrong.
What do you think is going on with Harvey, honestly? I mean, this looks really narcissistic. It looks really self-centered. I mean, and I would say the fact that he's actively attacking the opposing family of the son who's dead is a pretty narcissistic move. But is what's going on here with Harvey? Is he just as, you know, sucked into this as in Donna's land? Or is he just so a victim of this as well, and his mind is as mixed up as everyone else's that's been through the tornado of Donna?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is an example of not just, you know, we've talked about Donna with her apparent narcissistic tendencies. It's not just her. It's the entire system of her family members that have been enmeshed with her. There's one shared story, and they share what that story is, which is Donna is a caring, loving, perfect mother and wife. And as the narcissist has the defenses of denying their flaws, seeking admiration, and when something goes wrong, they blame other people. I think you're seeing that in the system as well, that tendency. And does he really believe what he's saying? He probably really believes it, because that's the way this kind of stuff works. It distorts reality and distorts perception. And it's like, the evidence be damned. They just don't see it.
He's 81 years old. He's now newly single. Well, I mean, he's still married technically, but you know, Donna's never coming out. Right. What do you see for the future of Harvey for someone like this? I mean, when you're met with something like this, and this is not a normal situation. It's not normal where suddenly your partner is gone, but they're alive and they're in prison for conspiracy to commit murder. Around this age, you have partners who die, but this is not that. This is very different. This is going to be one he's going to have to try and wrap his mind around even more. Do you think he's going to be able to do that? Or is this kind of one of those things where, you know, this is his conviction for the rest of his life?
The story will probably never change, and he will continue to be angry about it. But will he be able at 81 to move on in some way and rebuild himself after this? That's really questionable. How many more years does he have? You know, I think every day after 80 is kind of a gift. Many of us are not going to make it that far. So does he have much time in the future with all of this? I, you know, can't say.
Well, and especially with all of this stress, you know, an 81-year-old in general doesn't have a whole lot of time left.
No.
But then you throw on this massive amount of stress. I imagine it's taking its toll on every single member of this family.
Very much.
But then you look at wasn't during this one, but during the trial itself, when she was found guilty, the amount of women behind him wearing, you know, fashion circa 1989 Daytons with large brooches. And there's a lot of love in the villages, and there's a lot of ladies that I don't think are necessarily, you know, partnered up right now, because their Harveys have gone on to the great beyond.
Yeah.
This is an available Harvey.
Does this look like somebody you'd want to have your grandmother dating, though?
One of Jeff Dunham's characters? I think that might be a little awkward. Yeah. Like, hey, look who I brought home. This is grandma's Walter. New boyfriend, Harvey.
The women are swooping in with casseroles, you know, a different casserole every night for helping him out, undoubtedly. But, you know, one of my dear, dear friends is a gentleman who's 86. Mm-hmm. And for his 80th birthday, he threw himself his own funeral because he wanted to hear what people were going to say about him. And people flew from all over the country to come to this big party funeral. And guess what? He's now 86. And so he's going to have to do it again if he makes it to 90. And
nice.
He's got a girlfriend, and they have an active sex life still at 86. So it's, woo-hoo! You know, hard to say, but he didn't think he'd live that long. So
get it, boy.
Yeah. There might still be some fuel in old Harvey yet.
There might be.
There might be. Didn't they do that? Forgive me here if you're not Gen X or older, but didn't they do that on Little House on the Prairie? Didn't Charles help somebody throw their own funeral while they were still alive?
That was the Golden Girls.
No?
Yeah, well, I do know what happened.
Well, maybe it happened on, yeah, maybe it did there as well, but I'm pretty sure that was a Little House on the Prairie, but I digress.
It was a very special crossover episode where the Golden Girls met Little House on the Prairie. Granted, it was completely different time periods,
but
they did cross over, and yeah.
Speaking of which, I saw a crossover of Love Boat yesterday. So, yeah, it was Laverne and Shirley in Love Boat. So it was a whole thing.
Wow.
I didn't know that it existed. Wow. Wow. With a very special appearance by Harvey Adelson.
There you go.
Coming up next.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.